ministries, a lot of children's ministries. But oftentimes, I think as adults, we feel like we don't really fit in. So I think God impressed on our hearts ways that we can use our own personal lives and ministries to serve Him. So we went to Indonesia and Singapore in early July of this year. Oh my gosh, it's this year. So next slide. So this is our team. So I'm going to, at this point, ask our team to stand up and turn around and face the congregation just to say hello, at least, and show our beautiful faces. You don't have to clap. It's okay. And, you know, I'm the odd man out here. I'm supposed to wear my batik shirt today. However, I forgot that I gave it away to our driver because it's like a nice shirt, and I just failed to wear it. So I feel a little FOMO right now, but definitely. Hey, stay standing. What are you guys all shy for? So I'm just going to take a quick moment. And so if you guys don't know, this is Peter. He's one of our resident physicians. This is Youngsu, Lily, Tina, Pressel, and Heriko, or Rico, as we like to call them. So just give them a round of applause, please, at this point. Just say hello. Thanks, guys. All right, you guys can have a seat. Oh, and also Rose, who wasn't able to make it because she is attending a conference somewhere nicer than here, I think. So this was us on the day that we left, and I wanted to use this as an opportunity to speak a little bit about our training process, which hopefully some of you will take part in as well. The training process was, as much as possible, relatively relaxed. We tried to meet about every other week, so every 2 weeks, maybe 3 weeks, depending upon our schedules. And we met, and we basically had a small group together, more or less. We met together, we prayed together, we ate a lot of good food together. So if you like to eat good food together with brothers and sisters, it's another little thing to join us with. But we met, we prayed, we shared a lot about even some personal inadequacies. We shared about our struggles and what we thought we could bring to the team, what we thought we couldn't bring to the team, and how we thought we could come together. And I think there was definitely, and one thing I wanted to share that could be applicable for you is that as we started to build the team, there was a lot that happened in terms of, oh, you know, there's a couple doctors on the team, and I know we're doing some medical stuff. What the heck am I going to do? And there was a lot of that kind of went on and happened, and there was a lot of sharing about, I feel inadequate. I don't know what I can bring to the table. But you know what? Each and every story that you're going to hear today talks specifically about how God used that individual and that person's life and the training throughout life to bring them to a point where they can use it effectively to share the gospel in Indonesia. And so you're going to hear a lot of those great stories as we go along today. So that training process went on from around February until we left, and we tried to meet as regularly as possible. And if we couldn't meet, we tried to do things like Google Hangouts and things like that as well. And we went on and kept sharing and praying throughout that process. So a little bit about where we went. So, if you don't know where Singapore and Indonesia is, Indonesia is this slew of islands down here below, and Singapore is right there. Singapore is one of those city/country Johns. I'm from Philadelphia, so I might use Johns a few times. But it's one of those things. So Singapore is where we initially flew into. So next slide. And in Singapore, you will find Pastor Paul and Elsa. They were a part of our church back in the late 90s and served with us faithfully. Pastor Paul met Elsa there. And for any of you guys who are looking, well, maybe I shouldn't really talk into this. But anyway, they really didn't like each other. And now here they are married with some beautiful children. And also, Pastor Paul started Grace Covenant Church in Singapore, of which they've been faithfully serving for a few years now and are still growing. And there's one of our one-year interns, Ellen, that's out there. So if you ever have things that you want to pray about, or even if you college students are struggling with what you want to do in your future and how you want to work and what you want to do, and you're a senior, you just don't know what the heck to do, go to Singapore for a year. It might be really great. Once again, Singapore is right over there. And then next slide. We went to this little small town in Indonesia called Pekanbaru. Pastor Paul and Elsa served in the city of Pekanbaru for a number of years. So just a little bit of a background on Singapore and Pekanbaru and Indonesia. So Singapore is a very modern city, but it's actually very unreached. If you look up things, if you look up Operation World in terms of the percentage that they kind of calculate of the unreached people in Singapore has a very large population in the millions, but actually it's almost 40% unreached. So that means the gospel has not reached them. So this could be a college student, a university student. This could be a young adult. This could be an older person. But the religious diversity that exists there is quite vast. However, Christianity there is relatively weak in its presence. And so it's one of these modern cities. So you can imagine you going up to New York City and doing evangelism there. It's just as difficult as that. Pekanbaru in Indonesia. Indonesia is a 80 to 85% now, 85% Muslim nation. So it is governed in a Muslim way, and it is, although they say outwardly that it's relatively religiously free, it's one of these countries where, for example, your identification to show that you are Indonesian will mark you according to your religion. So if you are Muslim, you will be marked as Muslim. If you are Christian, you will be marked as Christian. And when you are marked as Christian, you cannot live in certain neighborhoods. You cannot purchase certain vehicles. You cannot go to certain places. So although they, in some respects, they like to say that they're free, it is still actually very oppressed. One little story there, a little caveat is, for example, Pastor Paul Liu lived in a neighborhood in Pekanbaru where there were rolling blackouts to save on electricity. When they brought the electricity back on, his house was always the last to get their electricity back on. And it's just one of those things you had to get used to. So I think it's just one of those things for us to be thankful for the religious freedom that we have here in the United States of America. So next slide. So they're relatively close to each other. So the ministry that Pastor Paul can use in Singapore, he can oftentimes fly back and forth from Pekanbaru pretty quickly and pretty easily to serve in the ministry there. And the ministry in Indonesia is what we're going to use. Each of our team members are going to share about and talk about and hopefully impress on your hearts just a little bit here today. So next slide. And so the first one here is going to be about the orphanage. And so one of our team members is going to come up and share a little bit about the orphanage. Please welcome up Lily.
Hi, my name is Lily, and I've been attending GCC with my family for about a year now. And then this summer, I went on a first mission trip as a mother with young kids. I just went by myself, though, leaving my family behind. But so I'll talk about a little bit about the first day spent in Pekanbaru, especially at the orphanage. And let me first give you my impression before I went. So before the trip, when I thought of orphans and orphanages, I see like dark-skinned children, maybe dirty, unhappy, with, like they're not smiling in the pictures, or they're living in houses that are like run down, dirty, or they're living on the streets. So, but when I got to Pastor John Eddy's orphanage, I was blown away. I didn't really see an orphanage. I saw like a family. I saw God's kingdom there. These kids were amazing. Like you could feel God's love and presence in that place. And like they are loved by God, and that's why they sent his servants to there to love upon them. So these kids are actually called human jewels because they are deeply loved and accepted by God. And yes, there are tears of like past pain and suffering, sorrows, but there are also tears of the deepest joy and love you ever experience. So on the first day there, we arrived. Picture number one, we arrived. So on the drive there, I noticed all my teammates were quiet. Some were tearing up. I'm very observant. So they were tearing up. And it was really quiet drive there. When we got there, van pulled up, and we see a bunch of kids running out. And they had smiles on their faces. We stepped out of the van. They took our hands, or they give us huge hugs. They were just excited to meet us or to see old faces again. And they just welcome you like old friends or family. And so they dragged us into the building, this beautiful new building. I will share some of the history later. And they pull us into the building, and we took out the toys. They were playing with it. And then I heard music erupting from that courtyard, picture number two. I went out to investigate, and I saw this boy, Jeffrey, playing on a guitar, and there was a bunch of, like, kids surrounding him. There was a little boy just singing with him. It was so beautiful and so peaceful and serene. I was just sitting there observing that, and then I was also watching the kids playing soccer in that courtyard as well. There was a little playground. And I just remember, wow, I'm so blessed to be here, and this is my first day. So during this time, the medical team was setting up, and they were just taking in the sick kids, just diagnosing them and giving them like vitamins or some kind of medicine. And during this time, the rest of us were either playing with the kids, talking with the kids, or praying over them after they're seen by the doctors. At this time, I actually met Pastor John Eddy, and I was just interviewing him. I was like, Pastor John Eddy, and he has this like smile and his like sparkle in his eyes. Like, he's just excited to share about his mission and his work at the orphanage. I was like, how did this all come about? And he was just sharing that he was in this town of Peckinpah. He was praying to God, what is my mission here? And one day he was walking outside and he just saw a child doing hard manual labor, and he felt called to be a father and a shepherd to him. So he started collecting kids one by one into his like rundown house. And then he just took them in, and then he started praying for education, providing education for them. They don't have identification, a lot of these kids, so he would have to find like private sponsors for each of them. And so he took them in, and he provided, fed them, educated them, and then he expects these kids who have like they have like past pain, but he doesn't want that to limit them or restrict them in the future. So he expects all of them to be a worship leader, like stand in front of everybody and like just like sing, dance, or play a musical instrument. So he started Glow Fellowship a couple years ago as a church where these kids could serve God and worship God. And then just 3 years ago, actually, he's been praying for some reason, he prayed for a U-shaped building. And that's what he got. Like, God blessed him 3 years ago with a U-shaped building. It's like a rectangular U-shape. So it's beautiful. It's brand new when we visited. And it was just amazing how that came about. He was sharing how the stranger, complete stranger, this lady who practiced Buddhism, just felt something in her heart to give to Pastor John Eddy. He's like, what do you need? It's like, I need a building. I need a space for these kids. I need a school. Like, so he prayed, and then he was blessed with this building 3 years ago. So today, he celebrated 18 years faithfully shepherding this orphanage, and he has up to 30 kids now currently at the orphanage. So I asked some of these kids, I'm like, what do you want to be when you grow up? They were saying they want to be like missionaries, therapists, they want to be teachers, chefs. They want to help others. They really have a heart of service. So some of these kids, how they joined the orphanage, either their parents passed away, or one or both of their parents are still living, but their parents can't provide an education for them, so they send them to the orphanage. Or I'm actually met... I'm going to skip to picture number 4, bottom left. The girl in the middle, Casia, I met her during a different night. She actually has a different story. She, her mother left her at age of 3, and she lived with her father and a crippled brother. And she decided 3 years ago that she didn't want to live with them anymore. So she joined an orphanage, and she wants to be a physical therapist when she grows up to help other kids. She wants to help her brother. And she, 3 years ago, she came to the orphanage and she met Jesus. And I remember praying with her, and I was just, in the middle of prayer, she was just bursted out crying. And in that prayer, I was like, God, how can I pray for her? And God told me to hold her like a mother, hold her child. So I held her tightly and I kissed her and I told her how beautiful she is and how much God loves her. And she shared with me later that she really felt the love of God at that time. So let's go back to picture number 3. So that's some of the children's stories who are living there. And once the medical clinic was wrapped up, and I finished chatting with Pastor John Eddie, the bell rang for dinner, and the kids just flocked to the dining room. Actually, you see that little girl down here? This girl? Her name is Tintin. She's 3 years old, and she's new at the orphanage. She doesn't speak any English, but for some reason, she likes me. She pulled my hand. I think it's because we keep smiling at each other, and also because we both share the love of food. So she was the first one in the dining room, and I was happy to be with her because I was hungry. And she ate a ton. But actually, we sat down. We were ready to eat. We got our food. And then all of a sudden, there was "How Great Is Our God" playing by somebody in the corner of the room. And I was like, whoa, where did this come from? And I looked over, and I just remembered that this was the most beautiful chorus of that song I ever heard, because it was just echoing with praise for God in that room. We say grace, and then we had the most delicious dinner. It was cooked by the older girls at the orphanage. It was really good. And afterwards, they all helped each other clean up, and then there was more freestyle worship. And then we pray over the kids and we say goodnight. That was our first night there. It was hard to leave that first night. I think my teammates shared the same feeling. Is we went back to our AC, van. We went to a hotel while we leave the kids behind in the orphanage. It was even harder leaving on the last day, saying goodbye to the kids. It's like once you have tasted and seen the kingdom of God, it's hard to leave. And these children have the simplest and yet the fullest joy I've ever seen. And I keep comparing them to my own kids. I'm like, why are my kids like that? But and I remember telling my husband, actually, he's really sweet. I was telling him, honey, I don't want to come back. I love it here. And he's like, uh-huh. So I just want to share, this was my first mission trip. I went despite the fact that I had to leave my young kids at home. But I encourage you all to go. If you're a mother, these kids need the warmth of a mother. If you're a father, they need the love and affection of a father. If you're a young adult, college student, or single, they love to have a brother and sister to look up to. They need God the most, but they also need living examples. But most of all, when you go, you'll definitely be blessed. So just go and be blessed. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Peter. I'll be talking about the medical clinics that we held while we were in Indonesia. The medical team was comprised of me, Rose, and Pressel. So I'm an internal medicine doctor, and Rose is infectious disease, and Pressel was a pharmacist. So on the first day, Lily was sharing, we came to the orphanage and we held a medical clinic for the orphans there. So we did a brief medical checkup, make sure everybody was okay. So we saw between me and Rose about 25 to 30 kids. A lot of the kids were pretty healthy. The hygiene there was actually incredible. They were very well taken care of. There were a few kids that needed a little bit of attention. There was this one boy. He was 8 years old, and he had a hearing defect in his left ear. He was completely deaf on the left ear, and he had a birth defect. So I was looking in his ear. Actually, I was looking at this hole right next to his ear with an otoscope, and I was thinking to myself, I don't know what to do for this kid. And in truth, there was actually nothing I could do for him. You know, all we could do was pray for him, give him some, medicines and vitamins. You know, at that point, I kind of felt a little bit discouraged. I was, thinking to myself, gosh, I really just want to be part of the prayer team that prays for them afterwards, because I felt like that's what they needed the most. You know, the thing is, I have all these years of training and schooling, but what could I really offer them? And I was a little bit discouraged by that. But, about 3 days later, we went to what's called a shanty town or villages near the garbage dump. And, there's a lot of poor people living there. We met this man right down here in the corner. you know, he came up to us and basically he had suffered a stroke some years before. And he was weak, like he couldn't lift his arm, and he was in a lot of pain. And you can definitely see, I think this picture captures his distress. Like he wanted to be better. He wanted to provide for his family. But, you know, because of his infirmity, he couldn't, and he just felt, like, incomplete. Again, you know, I prayed for him, and I gave him some, you know, vitamins, and really, at that point, I was like, gosh, what can I do for him? But really, the only thing that I could do was pray for him. Again, I was feeling a little bit defeated. And this is not a discouragement or anything, but at that point, you know, God was ministering to me. And, you know, he was telling me, Peter, it's not up to you to heal these people. It's up to me. I just want you to be there, and I want you to experience my heart for these people. Sorry, I wasn't emotional when I was practicing this, but... the thing is, the reason I felt discouraged is because truly I have nothing to offer them, but it's only Jesus that can heal them, completely meaning mind, body, and soul. And that is the great message that God wanted to share with me is like, Peter, you don't have to do anything. You just have to show up, be there, and experience my heart for these lost people. And I think that's most of ministry, honestly, is just show up and be there and experience what God can do. You know, for those of you who want to experience God, want to experience God's heart, but don't exactly know what you can offer, what I advise you is just to go, obey, and experience what God has in store for you, and it will be amazing. That's it.
My name is Tina, and for those of you who don't know, I work as a teacher, and I'm going to go ahead and share about an opportunity that opened up for Jericho and me to give a teacher workshop for 2 days. Pastor John Eddy had a burden to disciple the nations through education, and so he started a Christian school for the children at the orphanage as well as for neighboring children in the area. And this school opened its doors for the first time ever 2 weeks after our team left. They started with kindergarten and first grade with hopes to add an additional grade each year. Currently, they have 13 students enrolled from the orphanage, but already 20 families from the neighborhood nearby are interested in enrolling for next year. So Pastor John Eddy, he's a man who dreams big. He looks far ahead and trusts God completely. So he is actually already collaborating with architects to design a building for junior high school. I'm just going to go ahead and actually read what I wanted to share so that I stay on topic and within my time limit. Okay. We can be sure every detail of our lives of love for God is worked into something good. We know with great confidence that God, who is deeply concerned about us, causes all things to work together as a plan for good for those who love him, to those who are called according to his plan and purpose. This verse from Romans 8 came alive before, during, and after this trip for me. About 5 days into the trip, Jericho and I were unexpectedly asked to give an impromptu workshop for teachers because Pastor John Eddy found out that we worked in the world of education. The way it was presented to us one scorching afternoon was, you're going to be teaching teachers for a school that has never been in session yet. We're actually opening in 2 weeks. Teachers who have absolutely no prior experience or training. Teachers who will be teaching kindergarten and first grade. And the first thought that popped into my mind was I had so many educational resources to give away, and I also had so much room in my suitcase to bring it. And here I am with nothing, presenting to an audience I don't know how to connect with. and we're teaching, like, later this afternoon. It sounds stressful, but missions trips are often can be like this, so I was not surprised. But God gave me peace, and I felt like everything was going to be okay. He was about to show me how he had been preparing me for what he had prepared for me in Indonesia. Just before this trip, I was at a new school and felt displaced every single day. Not just because I was new, but because the outlook and approach of my new community was so, so, so different than what I was used to and anything that I've ever experienced before. So with every challenge, thank you. With every challenge, there was a purpose, and God seemed to ask me every day, Tina, can you see above the chaos? Do you see the people? Are you listening and learning? When I got to Indonesia, he proved how valuable this portion of my walk with him had been. The school I just spent a year in, culturally and operationally, paralleled Indonesia in very striking ways. God developed and grew my perspective specifically for these teachers in Indonesia well before I even came face to face with them, letting me marinate in a setting that had all the right ingredients so I could appreciate this unexpected opportunity of teaching teachers who I didn't think I knew how to connect with, but really I did because of the journey I had just been on with the Lord. Another way God used a detail of my life for something good was in a messy garage a week before we left, my messy garage. I was cleaning and I stumbled across a box from grad school. I went to a Christian institution for grad school, so one thing I saw over and over in my notes and papers were reflections on how Jesus is the master teacher. The way he used the known to teach about the unknown, the way he effectively used questions, the way he related to individuals, and on and on. So even though I threw out so much junk this summer, I just couldn't discard these binders and projects. The contents were of eternal significance and informed my teaching practices through encounters with Jesus. God brought all of this to the forefront so that I could be prepared to share with conviction that Jesus is the master teacher. And above any practical message I could offer, perhaps God wanted us to lay aside insecurities about the what's and instead focus on the who. And just remember that Jesus is the foundation, the chief cornerstone that all else builds upon. Overall, the workshop, of course, included very practical takeaways for classroom life. The teachers there were very resourceful. I was very impressed by, you know, just this one door that they decorated. They took wrapping paper that was thrown in the trash and just cut out these butterflies individually and made this, like, whole flower scene. And just in being a teacher, that's one major aspect is, you know, creating that atmosphere that's conducive to learning. And I felt like they really had that, even though, you know, they said, we have no experience, we don't know what we're doing. But I think, you know, God knew who he was choosing as teachers for this school. I'll admit it was really nice actually not knowing about this workshop beforehand. I was just trying to survive in a new school community and clean my messy garage, and God took it from there. To finish, I just have one final story. I currently have a student. He is obsessed with maps and world cultures. He's an 8-year-old boy who, in particular, loves Indonesia and Singapore. He brought this up the first day of school, you know, so he brought it up first. So you can imagine, like, just how overwhelmingly excited he was when I was able to respond by telling him that I actually went to Singapore and Indonesia this past summer. And I don't think that's coincidence. He's my daily reminder to pray for Singapore and Indonesia. Whether or not I ever get to go back, that remains to be seen, but I know that this trip was not a one-and-done trip. It still resonates in my heart and through eternity. We know with great confidence that God, who is deeply concerned about us, causes all things to work together as a plan for good for those who love him, who are called according to his plan and purpose. My pictures just kind of represent past, present, and future. Past, that was just us when we were there for the workshop. Present, the pink uniforms, those are the currently enrolled students in this school that what didn't even exist when we were there. And this picture on the bottom is the they're dumping dirt for leveling the ground on the property next to the orphanage to really start planning and making room for this junior high when all they have right now is kindergarten and first grade. And actually, just you can't see it, but Pastor John Eddy's T-shirt, this will kind of give you insight into his personality and Indonesian culture. It says, "Procrastinators unite!" exclamation point, and then dot, 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 tomorrow. Thank you.
Hello, my name is Jericho, and I've been attending JCC. What? Good. Okay. I've been attending GCC since 2013, and I'm working in the field of education technology, and kind of like the being known as a tech guy or techie guy or the guy who is always on his iPhone. So before the trip, and chat just happened to find out, I was always on my phone during Sunday service. So he was texting Chris and said, I'm just like paraphrasing that a little bit. Then Chad said, like, oh, I really wish Jericho will be like not using his phone. And then he was texting with Chris, just like, oh, I really wish he can stay away from his phone. And the very beginning of our trip in Indonesia, my phone broke. Nobody knew why. And I even took it back to the Genius Bar, and Apple cannot even figure out why my phone broke. So I got a new one. Thank you, Chad. So don't use your phone too often before your worship leader, family group leader, or such. Yeah, so it always feels like a safe for me having my phone with me because I almost can do everything through my phone on the internet and browsing through everything that I needed. And that's a lesson learned for me. And because Chad prayed for me, thank you. And please pray for my thing will work, but not be broken in the future. Yeah, so my phone turned into a brick, and I kind of feel hopeless without my phone being able to function properly. However, my heart, my eyes, and my ears are ready to see, to listen, to experience God's great work in Pekanbaru, Indonesia. And that's the beginning of my trip. So the online learning teacher. So I'm working in education technology. And before the trip, I was not assigned for any particular task because I'm not working in the medical field, nor do I work in any other field. So Chris came says, I can just stay next to him and try to assist anything. So I was like, yeah, I can chill a little bit. But little did I know, after the first meal, we were going back to the hotel, and Pastor John Eddy and I had a conversation. He asked me, like, what I do for a living. So I explained a little bit. I work for Penn Dental Medicine, the dental school, in the learning technology team. So I basically help my professor how to integrate technology into the classroom. And then Pastor John Eddy heard me and stared at me with his eyes wide open and say, oh, so you can share that with my teacher. Do you know that I'm starting a school? At that very moment, my heart just started burning. Because that's always my dream, to do something in the field of education with technology, with the Lord's teaching. So I stared back at him with my eyes wide open as well. I was like, okay. So I talked to Chris right away. I said, Chris, I always have my presentation deck ready for this very moment. So I opened up my laptop, my online drive, and then I shared with Chris. And Chris looked at me and said, I think you should think a little bit about localization and customization, because they might be too advanced for them. And he was right, because Monday afternoon, I went into the classroom with the teachers, and I saw how under-resourced they are. And basically, I want to share a little bit more about my journey from Taiwan to Philadelphia and then to this mission trip. So before I applied to graduate school, no one thought I could get into any school due to my poor academic performance during my college year. My only hope was the learning technology platform that I founded in 2012. So one day, when I was a teacher teaching high school chemistry, I was really stressful because I didn't know what my future would look like. So one day in my room, my bedroom, I pray, and God promised me that He will bless me in education technology. So I have been holding on to that promise to today. I still do. He brings me from Taiwan to Philadelphia because of this particular online learning platform, because that's the only thing that I can show up in my resume. And this year to Pekanbaru, Indonesia, I didn't prepare for anything. However, when I presented in front of the local teachers, I feel like God has been preparing me since 2012. So He brings me from Taiwan all the way to Philadelphia and then to Pekanbaru to fulfill His great and perfect plan. By having me teach those teachers at the orphanage how to use video lectures in their class to help their student learn better. So when I think about His perfect plan, I can't help but praise Him for His marvelous works. So we had two consecutive days of on-site training. And like I said, I need to like tweak everything and improvise so that I can fit into their needs at the local school. They didn't even have a landline internet connection. So all we had is a 3G. They didn't even have 4G. It's a 3G router. The speed was like super slow. And when I talked with them about recording the video lecture on their laptop was too old to install software. So I said, well, I will donate my own equipment to you. So I started my own online learning platform by using a laptop and writing tablets. And I was so convicted to donate those equipment to them. So once I came back, I prepared everything so that I can send the whole package to Remnant Westside Church, because they were going to send another team to Pekanbaru. The night before I sent out my package, I took a picture, like how I send off my kids to college or something. And I had a mixed feeling, because I feel like this is how I started my career. This is how God brought me from Taiwan to here and then to Pekanbaru. And now I sent off those set of equipment so the Lord will be able to fulfill His greater plan in Indonesia and maybe even reach out to the rest of the world. So I think to wrap up my presentation, I really want to testify the promise from the Lord is still the same, like yesterday, today, forever and ever.
Wow. Hopefully you guys are all as moved just hearing these stories of everybody's personal testimonies that they experienced there. Just brought back a lot of memories for me. For those of you that don't know me, my name's Pressel. I was the pharmacist that Peter referred to. Felt like I couldn't really do much there, though. But what I'm going to share about is life in Indonesia and what that was like. And so you heard, you know, a little bit about the medical clinic. You heard about the orphanage that we visited, as well as the school that was just being planted, this Christian school. But we also had some time to go out and visit the outskirts of the city. We went to a dump. Yes, it's called a dump, and it's as bad as it sounds. Although the smell wasn't as bad, which thankful, because I'm not good with those kind of smells. And we also went to a couple of, we call it Shantytown, but essentially they're broken down shacks where people live. And you kind of get a picture up here of what it looked like. On the top picture, the panorama, on the far right, you see the dump that we actually went to. And then on the bottom here, on the bottom left, you can see just one of these what I call a shack, rundown place, but there was a lot of these that we went to with multiple families living in them. You can see just how to get to them is these broken planks of wood, you know? And so you kind of get a picture for what life is like in Pekanbaru. You know, I couldn't help but reflect on Pastor Ulysses' message from last week, and he talked about the law of diminishing return, and I think we all find ourselves either, you know, on that point where we have what we need or we have more than what we need, right? Life in Pekanbaru, I'd say, is probably on the early part of that curve, where they don't have enough. And as we were driving around, it was clear God wanted to open at least my heart and my eyes for, you know, just that portion of the world and that lifestyle that I'm so far removed from on my daily basis, right? You know, I live in a nice house. I have a, you know, cozy house. And I look for everybody here. You know, we all have nice shelter. We have our nice college dorms and stuff. And I'm being a little facetious when I say nice college dorms. I see the college students like, that. My dorm's not nice, right? But it is, when you put it in perspective, right? We have everything we could ever want, right? And so we went out to these places, and we went out there with very little. We went out there with a warm meal. We went out there with a little bit of Tylenol and Motrin, as Peter, you know, said. We had some vitamins with us. But God turned that into so much more. We went with smiles. We started talking to people, visiting them at the dump. And God used just that little bit really to, you know, lead to warm embraces that we had with people. Someone even wore a shirt that said, "I love Tina," and took a picture with Tina, right? You know? And it was just such an amazing thing that God used so little of us, with so little in our hands, but he turned it into something amazing. And when I reflected on that, it was like, God, why am I thinking that we're going with so little? We're going with you, you know? And being able to show that bit of love, that little bit of love, shows that glimmer of God's love for these people. And I think that's what we saw in those smiles when we went out there to the shacks and the dump. I think just a personal testimony and story from life in Pekanbaru was the last day we were celebrating the 18th celebration of the orphanage. And I was walking around. It was before the celebration. And this is a really abbreviated story, but if you want to hear the full testimony, just feel free to reach out to me. But as I was walking, I saw this one young Muslim guy. He was just by himself walking around the orphanage. He was there to help the doctor that was there. And he looked kind of lonely. And so God said, go up to him and just say hi to him. So I put on a big smile, got my big smile going. Went over him to him and said hi. Nothing to offer. But 2 hours later, God turned that little smile and that hi into an extensive Google Translate conversation because he didn't speak a lick of English. he turned it into this young Muslim man standing right beside me, clapping and singing Christian songs. He turned it into an opportunity for me to pray for him and share with him the love of God. Wow, I'm not an emotional person. and I think that opportunity that I had there that day, I get it every day. I didn't have to go all the way to Indonesia to experience that, but God showed me that there to remind me that his work is being done everywhere and needs to be done everywhere. And so for me, I think that's my encouragement and my prayer that we as a church, that me, myself as an individual, become more externally focused. And I think that's what God was trying to teach me on this trip, is to really see his people the way he sees them. And so I encourage all of you, you know, whether you can make a trip to Indonesia, whether you can do a short-term mission trip in Logan Hope, just a half hour away, do it. Because I think God will reveal such amazing things. And he'll use the little that you have, whether it be a smile or a warm meal, and transform it into something greater for his glory. So with that, we want to wrap up our presentation of the missions trip, kind of how we started and bringing it a little bit full circle. Before we went on our missions trip, you heard from our brother Youngsu, who shared about his testimony and, you know, his apprehensions and even going on this trip. So we figured it'd be great if he could come up and close and just share post-trip what God's been doing over in Indonesia and in his life.
All right, thanks. It's going to be kind of hard to follow. Yeah, my name's Young. And first, I just like to give, like, first fruits of sort and just thank God for, on behalf of the whole team, for just, you know, giving us this opportunity. And secondly, I'd like to thank the church because we really felt all your prayers. Tangibly, we really felt it. Like, you guys were kind of suffering, experiencing like a heat wave over here in 100-degree weather. While we were over there, we were kind of experiencing like cooler than usual temps, like I'd say mid to high 80s, low 90s. And it may not sound like much, right? But for me, I don't do well in the heat. And I learned on the trip, my brother Prestel, he's like similar to me. we just tend to sweat buckets. In fact, when we were like deciding who was going to room together, we made a concerted effort not to put Prestel and myself together because we both knew we needed two showers a day, one in the morning, one in the evening. I got to share my testimony prior to leaving, and some of the feelings are pretty common throughout the whole team, because before leaving, I was going through some struggles and trials of inadequacies, feeling of, like, you know, I really have nothing to offer on this medical missions trip. Now, I have a comp sci background, and, like, what am I really going to do? And then the other deeply seated issue I was struggling with was I really felt like I was going to be a burden on the rest of the team. I felt like I was going to limit them just because of my physical disability. And it was heavy. It was definitely weighing heavy on my heart. And a lot of prayer support through the team. We kind of identified these deceptions and lies for what they were. You know, they were attacks from the enemy. And it just sowed seeds of doubt in my mind. And it really got the focus off of God and onto myself. And what I mean by that is I was focusing on what, like, I had insecurities. I had inadequacies. I felt like I had nothing to offer. And the focus was on myself, right? It was always I. And once we were able to, you know, stop the attacks and realize my focus has to be on God, a lot of this stuff just melted away and a lot of pieces rained down. In fact, after this, I started praying during missions training. God, I have nothing to offer. I really have nothing to offer. So, you know, whatever you want me to do, I'll do. I was sharing this prayer with Peter. I was telling him this is what I was praying. And his reaction was, "Ooh, that's a dangerous prayer." You know, little did I know at the time, right, how prophetic his words would be. Because, you know, God decided to use this desperate prayer of mine, right? He used this desperate prayer to, I believe, to further his kingdom over there. And unfortunately, on the other side of the coin is I gained the attention and the attacks of the enemy. So let me fast forward to the first day of Indonesia, kind of similar as Lili. The first day we're in the orphanage, we're rolling up in a van to the orphanage, and prior to even parking, you see like 33, 35 orphans just spilling out of this building with huge smiles, hearts full of joy, waving to greet a bunch of strangers. And it was just so heartwarming that I can't help but to smile when I think about that. A few things that kind of stand out to me on that first day is, you know, the first day we kind of unpacked, got settled, got to know some of the kids. And in doing so, my image my preconceived notions of what an orphanage looks like, how an orphan is, you know, my stereotype of them. It was totally, utterly shattered. Because I thought orphans, you know, they're going to be down. They're going to be a bit withdrawn, reserved, hard to kind of get to know, right? But as Lily shared, it was just one big happy family because they had God, right? The second thing that kind of stands out is I felt like God was saying, though their biological parents neglect them, abandon them, why do you think I would do the same? You know, I'm their heavenly Father. I'm their great provider. And at the time, I really had to rebuke myself because I came in there with preconceived notions, a U.S. consumer mentality. I just felt like God was saying, just trust in me. Because, yeah, they don't have the latest gadgets. They don't have the designer clothes. But they have me. And they are godly content. lastly, we were having dinner, and as Lily shared, it was just amazing to see, and such a blessing. I'm not quite sure where the rest of the team was. We kind of all scattered. All the kids kind of grabbed their hands and just led us in different directions. I just remember two or three little kids just grabbing my hands and arms and just leading me to a table. And it was just great to see just everyone working as a well-oiled machine. They all fell into their own responsibilities, from food preparation, setting up tables, chairs, and even later, the older kids helping the younger just eat their meal. It was such a blessing on the rest, on our whole team to see that. And then lastly, what kind of stands out is after dinner, I was still sitting at the table, and about 4 to 5 16, 17-year-old girls drifted by and kind of sat down, so we started talking. And, you know, during missions prep, we kind of joked around and thought of ideas of icebreakers. And we came up with this, like, you know, Korean drama and Korean pop, it's widely consumed over there, right? So we thought, oh, yeah, this is a great thing that we can kind of use to break the ice. Unfortunately, I know nothing about either of these subjects. but God worked. And as we were talking, partway through, one of the girls just kind of just looked at me and asked me, Young, can I ask you a question? I said, sure. And she kind of hesitated and said, can you see me? And this really took me off guard. This really took me off guard because typically what people do is either they don't notice I have a visual impairment, or if they do notice, they don't mention it unless I mention it first. And there's something to be said about young kids' purity, directness, and, like, maybe lack of political correctness. But I remember thinking in that split second, right? I remember thinking, I can answer a question one of two ways. I could vaguely answer her question and kind of steer the conversation to safer waters, or I could do what God sent me here to do. I really felt like God was saying, all right, It's go time, right? It's time to walk the walk in obedience and trust. And, yeah. So as I was finishing up my testimony and sharing with them, they got up, thanked me, and told me how blessed they were. And a little bit later, Rose came by and just asked me, you know, what were you guys talking about? I was like, why? What's up? And she said, those girls, they were locked onto you. They looked like they couldn't, like, take their eyes off you. They were so riveted. And I was like, oh, man. Sometimes not being able to see is a blessing, right? Because if I were sitting around looking at that, I would have been way more nervous. But the other thing I was thinking is, you know, thank you, God. Thank you, Jesus, for hiding me behind your cross. So for the rest of the trip, I was able to share my testimony 3 more times, once at Sunday service, once with Pastor Paul and one of the members at GCC Singapore. And it was just amazing to see God work. He spoke to us so clearly. It was almost audible. That's how clear it was. And you know, I'd really like to encourage anyone out there that has any thoughts of going and may feel some of the similar feelings that we're feeling, like inadequacies, feelings of, you know, I have nothing to offer. I just really encourage you to just, you know, if he's knocking at your door, if he's calling your name, just answer. Answer in just obedience and trust, right? And cling to his promise, because he says that truly his burden is light and his yoke is easy. And you got to trust him that he's going to do all the heavy lifting. Thanks.
So I'm going to invite the band to come up at this point, and we're just going to take some time to close together. But as Pastor Young liked to say, we've been sitting for a while, so if we can all rise.